back, everybody, to another episode of the Wonner Podcast, the podcast where we break down and critique movies all in one big, long take. I'm Austin Archer, and with me, as always, is my childhood next-door neighbor, lifelong best friend.
Kramer, England.
Okay. We got a ghost story on our hands.
And this is a ghost story.
I think that's the way to categorize this. I think that this movie... So we are talking today about Steven Soderbergh's movie Presence that's in theaters right now.
Yep.
And I think that this movie is kind of divisive amongst audiences, which is to be expected with a movie that's marketed as a scary movie. And people, especially in the 21st century, go to scary movies with a certain expectation in mind. And if there's not jump scares every few minutes, and if there's not opportunities to cuddle close to your date while you're watching the movie, if it's just sort of more of a thinking person's scary movie, a lot of audiences are going to be disappointed. But I think a better way to categorize this movie than horror would be it's a ghost story.
It's a ghost story. I think that's the perfect way to describe it. Even Steven's, I mean, it's a ghost story slash family drama.
Right.
Like, and I think that's even how Steven Soderbergh categorized it, because he's like, it's not a horror. And the marketing, you know, the marketing isn't really jumping out as like horror, you know, like it's leaning towards that way to make people think that it's that way. Cause the titles are all saying like, it stays with you after you see it and it's very haunting, but it's not like, it's not really trying to misdirect you to make you think it's a completely different movie, but it is leaning towards that horror. So I get why people would be upset, because it's not scary. Like, there were probably two moments that I was like, oh, that's scary, or that's eerie. I mean, it really is. Eerie is a better word for it, right?
Atmospheric.
Like, yes.
I got the chills a couple times.
Yep.
There were a couple scenes where I went, ooh, and I got the chills. And I definitely got the chills at the end. But that
was the biggest part that I got the chills. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not, I didn't find myself like jumping back or recoiling or afraid to look at the screen. It's not a scary movie.
There was one jump scare that wasn't really a jump scare. I was just, for me, like the ghost moves this girl's stuff and puts it on her table, and she comes out of the bathroom and she screams. And for some reason that just made me jump. But that was really the only thing. Like,
and maybe you could call at one point the ghost rips her closet down while she's like hooking up with a kid.
When she's freaking out on the brother's room.
Right. And because you can't see the ghost, you don't know that it's about to rip the closet down. So it's a little bit of a, but you know that you have the feeling that something's going to come. But the movie's not really, it's not crafted to try to do that. So no, it's not crafted to terrify you. I will admit that the first time I saw a trailer for this movie, and I was reading the poll quotes and stuff from the reviews.
Yeah.
And I saw, first of all, I was very intrigued by Steven Soderbergh doing a ghost movie.
Yep.
And the movie looked, without even knowing what the conceit of the film was, it had a very unique cinema look to it from the trailer.
Did a ton of stuff. They were building up to it a lot. Like they would, you know, they showed a lot of teasers that would just show the camera kind of moving around and like, and they just say presence with like the weird score. Mm-hmm. And I kind of felt, you know, it did stand out because it was Steven Soderbergh.
Right.
Like, to me, he's the one that is the draw. Yeah. I mean, Lucy Liu is a great actress. I don't know the other actor's name. He's really good too.
He was fantastic in the movie.
He stood out the most to me. Like Lucy Liu, I expect that. But for him, I was like, I was blown away.
Here's the thing is, this movie is led by like three teenagers, and the teenagers are okay. I'd say that the girl's probably the best, and then like her brother's the next best. And I kind of thought that the bad kid was kind of
really
shitty. I was like, well, he was fine. He was fine.
Yeah. But, I thought that they were good for the situation that they were in.
For sure. It's a tough job for the actors, because it's all oneers. The whole movie is all as the name of our podcast.
So and I've gotta ask you this question.
Yeah.
Did you find any similarities to another movie that we have reviewed on this podcast.
Absolutely. So we talked about Here. Is that the movie you're thinking
of? That's the movie I'm thinking of.
So again, what's interesting from a performance aspect of in this movie, and I thought about Here because I thought exactly what we talked about on the show, that like if it's all going to be oneers, then it effectively becomes a play that's being filmed.
Yes.
And so the actors have to perform it like a play, but they have to also do film acting because they're wearing lavs and they're, you know, we can hear what we can hear them, but there's no close-ups. There are
not real. I mean, they get close a little bit, but there's no like real.
There are no performance close-ups. So we should just say this to start out. This entire film, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Presence, I would recommend it. I would recommend it.
Yeah.
I think it's worth your money in the theater. I think it's a worthwhile visit. And if you don't want to know about it, go see the movie and come back and watch this film. Because after I saw this movie, the first thing I wanted to do was go and watch videos about it on YouTube. And I went and looked and there weren't a lot. So I was like, will be the video that you can watch after you watch this movie, because we are going to be spoiling the film. So a major thing that you figure out within the first 5 minutes of this movie is the whole entire movie is shot from the perspective of the ghost. So that's what the movie is. The title is Presence. We are seeing the world through the lens of this presence. And it's a very unique concept for a film. I've seen ghost movies before that have done moments like this with the camera where it feels like the camera is the eye of the poltergeist that's in the house.
Yep.
But this is an entire film where the entire movie is this presence.
Yeah.
And so that being the case, every single scene, there can be no cuts. There can be no alternate camera angle. No. It's a collection of vignettes similar to Here.
Yeah.
So it's a collection of like 5 minute long plays.
Yeah. And the whole problem with Here was that the pacing was so weird and their timing of their acting was so long and drawn out that it just made it drag. Like, and in this movie, it felt like they were intentionally like overlapping dialogue. Like, or at least keeping the pace up. And I felt like that was a big difference, because it just felt more natural, like the way that they were talking.
So that's what in our episode on Here, we talked about how like Robert Zemeckis isn't really, and he admittedly, he's not really an actor director. He hires the best actors in the world so that they can just do their job. And he's much more technical. Robert Zemeckis is all about what's the camera doing and how are we accomplishing this thing. But so his actors in Here kind of felt like they were left to fend for themselves in a really tough situation, especially in that film where the camera is static and it's not moving.
Yep.
But Soderbergh here feels like he spent more time with his actors and he made sure that everyone felt really good about what they were doing in each of these 5 minute long plays, so that everything felt really rehearsed and felt really I was really impressed with the actors working with the camera and working with, you know,
and that's why the teens, to me, it worked, because I was surprised at how well they did within the boundaries of it being a one-er, you know, like usually, like, I mean, it's hard for some actors. I mean, I'm not experienced with it, but it's hard for some actors to remember all of their lines. Like,
sure,
film acting is hard or it's easier in the sense of a line, because you can just say, oh, what's my line? But in this one, you have to memorize. So it is more of a vignette. It's more of a play. But because they had it so, they had the dialogue paced so well, and like their timing on their lines was so done so well. I mean, the parents was obviously better than the teens, but the teens, I felt like, okay, I was very pleasantly surprised at how well they did with that type of acting.
Yeah. On a regular film set, it's rare to shoot more than one page of dialogue at a time in a single setup. And so usually as an actor, you show up to set, you get your sides for that day. You've seen the call sheet the day before, you know what it is that you're doing. You can come prepared, but like, usually it's like, oh, I've got to memorize these three lines for this first setup. And then for the second setup, I'll worry about those lines and so on and so forth. But showing up to set for this movie every day, these actors probably were performing a play that they had rehearsed for at least a few days, if not a full. It felt like you know, they talk about this with like 1917, that they were like, everything was a 5 to 10 minute long play that we all had to know every step of, and we would have to rehearse it for a very long time before shooting it.
Right.
Because it's very technical. And obviously this is a much more manageable sequence of oneers because it all takes place in the bounds of one house. There's a lot of things where, you know, like this entity whose POV we are looking at never leaves this house. It seems to be bound to the house in some way. It seems to have kind of boundaries around what it can and can't do. What's really interesting about this movie too is we're dealing with an entity that doesn't fully understand itself. It doesn't know who it is.
It really was strange how well that aspect of the character of the entity, the presence, I understood. Because it was like it didn't know what it was doing, and it would just kind of wander around, and they never say that it doesn't know what it's doing until about the halfway through the movie.
Right.
And I got that from it, which is so crazy to me.
Yeah. Once you understand that you're watching the movie through the eyes of a ghost, you're looking for clues like, is it malevolent? Is it angry? Is it?
Who is it?
Yeah. Is it pestering these people, or is it just curious? Is it a little child? Is it? And you're getting clues based on how it interacts with them. Does it care for them? Is it nice? Is it you know, is it mad that they're invading its space? And it does seem to, the presence sort of feels like an alien. It feels like this thing that's like it doesn't know what's going on. These people are coming in and it's just trying to gather information.
And there are certain moments that, like, so in the movie, the main character is the daughter, I guess you would say. I mean, the whole family is an ensemble, but she's kind of the main one that we focus on. And she had two friends who overdosed pretty recently together. And one of them was her really good friend. And then the other one she kind of knew. But she feels like almost pretty quickly in the movie, she feels that this presence is her friend. Right. And I want to know what you thought, because when I heard that, I thought, I don't feel like this is her friend. And I don't know why, but what did you think?
Well, I just thought it's too early in the movie it just seemed like, from a writing standpoint, it's too obvious for it to be her friend. But I thought maybe it could be another victim, or there's this red herring that's set up in the movie with the mom that's set up pretty early. The mom seems to have kind of this weird preferential regard for her son over her daughter. She has kind of a closer bond with her son than she does her daughter. They talk about when they're moving into the house that they're trying to get close to the school. So that he can swim at this school, and he has a better advantage at this school than he would at the other school.
Yeah.
And she wants to make sure he has the best competitive advantage to get into the best school with his swimming and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there's a scene early on in the film where the presence is watching the mom talk to her son, and she's kind of drinking and she's sort of spilling some information. And she says, you know, you'll understand someday that, like, parents do things that are questionable, and it was all for you. Everything I did was for you.
Yeah.
And even bad things that people do. So immediately I'm thinking, okay, so the mom maybe killed someone for her son or something, and maybe this is who our presence is, and it's going to be unveiled that she had a, you know, which I feel like, did you feel like the movie was setting that up?
Yeah, I felt like it was setting that story up to flesh it out more, but ultimately they didn't.
Because the husband even is doing things like he's calling lawyers and saying, hey, what is my exposure if my spouse did something illegal? What do I need to do to make sure I'm taken care of? If we're, you know, stuff like that. Now I have a question about this storyline.
Yeah.
Did you feel like it paid off? Because I didn't see it pay off.
Yeah.
Did you feel it resolved for you?
It never resolved, because we don't know what happened. Right. So Lucy Liu did I was figuring it was embezzlement or some sort of white collar crime.
It's something less malicious than murder.
It is.
But so the movie seems to be hinting that it could be murder.
I never got murder.
I just figured, since we're looking through the eyes of a ghost,
That makes sense. But, like, as the story went on, I kind of always thought, like, okay, she did something illegal, but it's pretty clear, or at least I felt it was pretty clear that, like, okay, she either stole money or she did some sort of corporate insider trading or mm-hmm. something to kind of better their situation. And that's ultimately, we never know what it is, right. But that is a problem between the father and the mother. And the payoff for me was the fact after the fact, this is a movie where once you leave the movie and you think about it more, you get more and more insight, and it'll I want to rewatch this again because it will give me more of that insight. But the point that I saw was that, this presence is understanding more about the mother and father in a way that was important to the presence. Like it kind of like was getting that fact that, okay, this is what was going on. Mm-hmm. Like this is what was happening. So it made sense in that sense that like he saw the presence, saw the parents, why they were having troubles, and it kind of made sense to the presence, you know? Mm, so
yeah,
that was the payoff, but that definitely comes after the fact. Cause I was like, what was that all about? And then like, as I thought about it, and as I was reading online, it was like, okay, that makes sense that the payoff is a little bit more personal.
Yeah. So this movie, like pretty early on too, it's not really disguising the fact that there's something in this house. Like pretty early on, our main character, the girl, is looking right at it.
Yes.
And there's these really kind of like, you know, we talk about how the movie's not very scary, but there's like these eerie shots where the presence will back into her closet and will sort of be looking through like a closet door at her around a corner. But in that way, the presence seems kind of shy and scared. Yeah. And it seems rather than attacking her, because she'll look at it and then it will back up.
It backs
and
it up. Will,
it'll back off into the closet and sort of hide. And so you have this sort of this innocent feeling to the presence, but also the movie is acknowledging that, yes, this is what you think it is early on.
Yes.
And then it's not till about the midway point that it gets brought up, that this girl tells her family, hey, I think there's something in this house. And pretty soon thereafter, it's revealed to the entire family that unmistakably, unambiguously, there's something going on in this house. What happens is there's this scene where the brother is talking about how he bullied this girl at school. And the brother's kind of a douche. Like he's just not a very likable character. And
he's really into himself.
Yeah. And he's kind of a mean kid at school. He's all about popularity and being cool. And as he's sort of, you know, being terrible to his sister and calling her crazy and you know, an attention freak and stuff.
Yeah, and he's saying like you're ruining my social status. He doesn't say those words, but he says that like you're ruining it. And actually, before this scene, they have a fight at the dinner table. The brother really unloads on his sister and is basically saying you're crazy. This is so stupid, because she's like, she says at the dinner table, I think there's a presence here. Like I think there's something here, and they're all like, oh, whatever. You know, the dad definitely has a better relationship with the daughter than the mom does.
Yeah.
Like they're closer, and then the mom and the son. Anyway, so he gets really mad. And then we have the scene where he is bullying. He talks about this story where he's bullying, and the dad is like, that's really rude. And the mom is like, you guys are so mean, but almost like boys will be boys type thing.
Right.
And it's like, it really is pretty, it's pretty horrible what he
did. It's pretty bad what they did. Yeah. They're like teasing the girlfriend or the friend of one of the kids that died. And like, it's like really, it's pretty.
Yeah, it's is that what that was? Was
I think
one of the girls,
or I don't know. I'm not sure exactly, but it was someone, I got.
Yeah,
but
they were either way, they were tricking a girl to wear a certain shirt that they thought she looked stupid in that had some meaning to her.
Yeah,
and they ultimately end up like making fun of her for it, and like, oh, you're so, you know, like,
yeah.
And then they had some sort of, I think they released some sort of like a picture of her that was, you know, not appropriate. And so they did these horrible, horrible things to her.
Yeah. And the presence at this point does its most, it's been shown in the movie that the presence can touch things, that it can pick things up and move things around. At one point it's torn down the girl's closet and it's, you know, like, you know, and it goes up to the son's room. And it trashes his room. It's breaking his, and they all, the whole family comes up and they see, you know, drawers opening and closing, lights turning on and off. It's unmistakable that like there's something going on in this room. And that leads them to bring in a poltergeist, like a medium. Or not a poltergeist, a medium. And it's the sister of the realtor that got them to deal with the house, played by Julia Fox. And not the medium, the realtor was played by Julia Fox. The medium, I don't know who the actress is that plays the medium, but this medium comes in and she gives us more information on how these things function. And we get a lot of like information on how this movie's lens of what, you know, the afterlife is like, or what it's like when a medium is looking at a ghost. Now, here's a fun question. Knowing the end of this film, when in all of the, because this is another scene where I got the chills every time the medium would look directly at the camera.
Yep.
And for I would get the chills because she's looking, that was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, really? And you, so do you think, knowing the ending of this movie, that she's seeing who it is?
Oh, I didn't think about that, but
she's in a room.
Was.
Yeah.
With, yeah. Isn't I, you that know, crazy? That is actually very, very crazy.
Yeah.
Because this scene was really, it was really well done. Because this is like, I mean, this is pretty much the midpoint of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
The movie is cut very well. Yeah. But
there's not a single scene in the movie that doesn't add to
the stuff
we need. There's nothing that's superfluous. Everything adds to
what
the next piece of information we need to know.
Exactly. Yeah. And this scene, she says, she gives us so much information that all of a sudden makes more sense in the moment. And then also down the line, like, of the movie, because she says that, like, you know, trauma can unlock things, and it's like a door that is everybody has this door in their mind, but only certain people have it open. And if you have it open, you can see into the dead, or you can have some sort of contact with the dead. And she says trauma can sometimes open the door just a little bit so you can feel a presence. And that's why she thinks that the daughter is feeling that presence.
Right.
But then the thing that was most important, which I caught on to, is she says that the presence doesn't know. Sometimes they don't know who they are. They don't know why they're there. They just have a feeling, which helped, like, okay, that makes sense as to why this presence feels shy, and it's like trying to figure out what it's trying to do, which I thought was great. But the thing that I clocked that I want to know if you clocked as well is, she says, you know, the presence doesn't follow the constraints of time that we do. So it could be from the past, a long time ago, it could be from just recently, or it could be from the future. So did you get that?
I definitely clocked that, but I can't believe that you put together who it was based on.
I definitely clocked
that, but I was like, okay, cool. So like, I don't think I put it together
at that point, but after that point, because I kept thinking like, oh, it's in the future. Like it could be somebody else.
Yeah.
And so before it was revealed, I knew who it was, but it was still a chilling reveal. But anyway, that was a great scene. I thought it was really, really well done.
I can see putting that together once, like maybe the scene before, like the scene before the final scene, going, okay. Like, because you know what happens, and then going, oh, okay, got it. And then knowing that before the mirror. So this is a big thing we need to talk about, is reflective surfaces in this movie.
Yeah.
In this scene with the medium, early on in the film, when the family is looking at the house to buy it, the realtor, Julia Fox, is like pointing out the mirror to the daughter, going like, oh, this is like an old mirror, you know? And she's looking at it. And every time the presence is near a reflective surface in this movie, it's shot at an angle, so as not put whatever the presence is directly in the path of the mirror, so that we would be able to see it or not see it. And initially you think, as a spectator, that this is just done as a matter of practicality. This is a low budget movie, and like, they just didn't want to put the effects budget in to like map out the camera operator. Cause I was thinking like, oh, that could be a fun effect, to know that we're looking through the ghost's point of view and have it go directly past a mirror and we don't see the camera.
Yeah. That's kind of what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. And it'll go up to like picture frames and look at a picture, but it'll stay at an angle so as not to be seen in the reflection, or it'll go up to a window, and the glass window, it'll always stay at an angle so that you can't see it in the reflection. Yeah. And I thought, I clocked it as a technical thing that they just decided to save money. And I thought, that's kind of a bummer. I know that it's a low budget movie, but I also know that like, keying out a person for a simple effect like that isn't that crazy of a thing to do. Turns out that it's actually a big intentional thing that's part of the nature of this being, that it, like, on some level is not ready to look at itself in the mirror. On some level, it understands that it does not want to be seen in reflective surfaces yet, because it's not, like, ready to understand who it is. And so in this scene with the medium, she's looking at the mirror and she's talking about how, and I thought this was a kind of a cool line. She goes, older mirrors have just seen more people. They've just, they've seen more faces. And then she says to the mirror, and she looks through the mirror at the camera, and she says, help her, you know, help her. And she touches the mirror. Oh, and it's
she said that. That was, that was really, really good.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. So, and so you're like, okay, so this is somehow, and you've gotten this feeling already up to this point.
Yeah.
That the presence feels protective of the daughter and feels a little more distrustful or hostile toward the son, especially because it went up and trashed the son's room and all this stuff. And that's how we feel as an audience too, is we're like, I like the daughter, son's kind of a jerk, and and I like dad, and mom's kind of sketchy, and
she's doing some illegal stuff, you know, pretty quick. But the other thing that happened a little bit, that happened before this scene, that's really important, is the brother, you know, they moved closer to the school so that he could get on the swim team, and then also that he could become friends with this person. Ryan is his name, played by West Mulholland. Mm-hmm. But like his friend, like you immediately can tell that his friend has a crush on his sister.
Right.
So like they kind of, you know, he comes and he starts creating he starts talking with his sister, like, and like they come home one day before anybody's there, and they, you know, hang out, and she's like, hey, you want to go up in my room? And he's like, I don't know, he's kind of playing hard to get, but they go up in his room, and then this is when like they start kissing, and then this is when the closet comes down.
Right. And this kid tells us something about, I mean, in this first, right away, alarm bells were going off in my head. I was like, oh, that kid's dangerous. Like when he's
that's what I thought too. I was like, this kid is insane.
Oh, immediately he has this monologue about like how he never feels like he gets to choose anything. His mom is like this overbearing control freak, and he has no freedom. He has no control. Yeah. He has no power in his life, that he doesn't get to choose anything for himself. And then he says to her, so everything that, because initially I'm going, oh, this is setting up for like a sexual assault. Like he's saying, I don't get to control anything, so I'm going to control this. But then the screenplay kind of subverts that expectation and turns it. And he says, so I'm going to let everything that happens between you and me be your choice. Yeah. You get to choose. And he goes, because I've been deprived of choice my whole life, anything that happens between us, it's going to be your choice. And I thought, oh, okay, that's interesting. Maybe I misread this kid, you know?
Yeah. But the other thing that he talks about, there's two things he talks about. The first thing that he talks about is he asks about her friend. And at first you're kind of like, whoa, dude, what are you doing? But then she's like, you know, nobody asks me. So it's kind of like, she's okay with that. But then he starts talking about like, and this was when really I was like, okay, this kid's the bad guy. He talks about how like, it's just so crazy. Like it can happen so quickly. And he's talking about death. And it's so like, you can tell he's obsessed with it.
And this is what I mean. Like, by this kid's performance is, I think his performance a little heavy. I think it's I think, and he's, I don't like to criticize young actors because I don't think I would have done a better job at his age. It's like you said, it's already a tough task for the actors in the show because it's a bunch of little plays. They're all done in oneers. So everything this kid does, and he's got a tough role. He's got to play a lot of, you know, concealment, and you know he's got to be charming and interesting while also having a dark underside, and that's difficult. And so I don't want to be too critical, but I will say that like it is a little heavy,
a little bit
on the like the douchiness, the broiness, and also like the darkness of it, where I wonder if he could have found some of those lighter, more charming tones that would have misdirected us a little bit, and then really come in with like a heavy darkness at the end. But he's pretty sketchy from the jump.
Yeah, he is. I got immediately like, okay, stay away from this kid. He's not good.
Yeah.
Like, and you can tell pretty early on that the presence is protecting Chloe, is her name, the sister. And so you get that immediately. And then, so I was like, okay, well, the presence is protecting her from this kid.
Yeah.
Like I, you know, that's probably the reason.
For sure. And the movie's not doing, it's not like trying to,
no,
that's not the big twist of the film. Like yeah. The second or third time we meet Ryan, we see him try to drug.
Yeah.
Our like he puts something in her drink and he tries to drug her and the presence, yep, knocks the drink off the table.
Yep.
And it's like, so it's like pretty early on with knowing Ryan, we're like, okay, Ryan's bad.
Yeah.
Ryan's bad.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah. And like you said, I don't think the screenplay is trying to hide that. It's not.
Yeah, no.
So, and this was written by David Koepp, and David Koepp is a great writer. He wrote Jurassic
Park. It's a good screenplay. This is a very smart screenplay.
Yeah. And that's why when I saw Soderbergh and Koepp, I was like, okay, this is going to be interesting, if anything. And it was. And just David Koepp knows what he's doing. You know, it's not like he's had amazing movies his whole career, but he's done some amazing things. You know, Jurassic Park is amazing. He really knows what he's doing.
And by letting us know unambiguously that Ryan is dangerous, that's also a way to create tension whenever, yes, what's her name? Is it Lily or is her name or the daughter's
Chloe.
Name? Chloe. Whenever Chloe is hanging out with Ryan, we know something she doesn't. We and the presence, because like we're learning things as the presence learns things. We know that Ryan's bad because Chloe goes to the bathroom and Ryan puts something in her drink, but the presence watches that happen. And so we have information that she doesn't, and that adds to the tension. Is like,
yeah,
we're seeing more than she's seeing.
Yeah, and we like, get away from like, this guy.
Yeah, and just like the presence, we kind of feel helpless. It's like, how much can I do here? Can I, you know, what are my powers? Can I grab him and throw him out the front door? Can I scream? I don't think I have a voice. You know, it's like this, it's an interesting kind of game of this entity trying to figure out how it's going to help and how it can intervene.
So it was very smartly written. But yeah, I mean, basically, so after the midpoint, when we have the medium, you know, in there, and this movie's only 85 minutes long.
Yeah.
So it's an hour and 25 minutes, which, and you know, it's funny about pacing that we've talked about a lot. This movie was very well paced, but it didn't feel 85 minutes long. And I mean that in a good way.
Yeah, like, totally.
It was slower paced, but it moved, but it felt like, I mean, it felt exactly as long as it needed to be.
It could have
even been longer.
Exactly. But like I said, every single scene, every bit of dialogue, everything that we're learning is for a purpose. And even the way that the movie transitions from scene to scene, because what it will do is it will just cut to black and then reemerge. And it's almost like we're experiencing the story as the presence is, which is the presence is jumping from moment to moment. The presence is not just always there.
Yeah. And it doesn't have control of when it gets to a moment.
Right. And so just as the medium says in the midpoint that it's sort of moving around through time, it's the presence is only getting the information that it needs to get to understand its purpose, to understand why it's there and to understand what it's there to do. And and so it's like, that's, so the movie, every single scene is just delivering us, the audience, but also the presence, the next piece of information that it needs to know or understand.
Yeah. And that was what I thought was interesting, because it cuts to black. Like it's a hard cut. And at the beginning of the movie, I was like, okay, that's kind of weird. And I heard a review that was saying like, it should have been a fade to black and then a fade up from black. And as once we have the midpoint, you know, of that scene, I understood the cut was basically, you're done in this area and then I'm going to put you back. So it's almost like this is the only moment that I need to experience. So the hard cut to me was symbolizing like, he's out of this scene and then he comes back at this moment that he doesn't even know where it is. Right.
Yeah.
Did you kind of get that from the hard cut as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Especially afterward, after thinking back going, this totally makes sense that this is just a collection of vignettes that are being witnessed by this presence that doesn't quite understand why it's being shown this, doesn't quite understand what it even is or what its purpose is. It's trying to understand, so it's following people around and trying to get pieces of information. And I think that that could be used to explain why there's a little bit of red herring writing in here, because if everything is necessary information, then that sort of, you could be critical of this red herring storyline of like, what's the illegal thing that the mom did and why is the dad considering, you know, getting separated?
Yeah.
And that, but I think it's like, if this is the presence trying to put the pieces together, then that would be interesting information to be like, oh, I get to, you know, what's dad talking about? What's this, you know?
Yeah.
So, should we just
let's get into who the presence is.
Yeah, let's. So the finale of the film, the kind of penultimate scene is like the parents go out of town and the kids are home alone. And and Ryan and Chloe have this plan to like, they're going to hook up. But it's been established earlier in the film that Chloe's brother doesn't like the idea of Ryan and her hooking up. And Ryan says, don't worry, I'll take care of him. And so Ryan shows up and
she kind of agrees. She kind of agrees to it. Like, oh, okay. Like she doesn't say no, but
So Ryan shows up and like he and the brother are like listening to music, and Ryan suggests that they make some screwdrivers, some cocktails. Ryan, of course, goes in the other room, does what he does. He throws drugs into the cocktails because Ryan's a messed up kid, and he drugs her brother with, we don't know what it is yet. It turns out to be fentanyl. And
is that what he gave him as well?
I'm pretty sure that that's what he's given everybody is he's dosing everybody with fent and just like, you know, he's just knocking people out with fent and killing people.
I guess it is. Yeah. I guess it is the same thing he puts in hers. He puts in his. So the brother is just out. He's out. Yeah.
And so Ryan goes up to hook up with Chloe. But what he's really there to do is, the thing he tried to do the other day, he drugs her with the thing. She drinks it this time.
Yeah. And he does this like, he comes in, he's like, hey, I put your brother to sleep. And she's like, I don't want to do this. Like, I don't feel comfortable with this anymore. Like, I've changed my mind. And then he does this thing where he's like, I'm such an idiot. And like, he starts,
he's Chris Farley from the Chris Farley Show.
Idiot.
Oh, stupid.
That's basically what he does.
He does that.
And I actually thought it was really good because he's doing a tactic, which he's trying to make her feel bad. You know, he's beating up on himself so that she feels bad for him.
Well, and this is also what pushes it forward into the whole time he's been talking about it, it's your choice. It's you choose everything. Yeah. But now he's kind of coercing her into something that she has clearly said no to.
Yeah.
And he gets her to agree to take a drink with him, even though she's said, I don't want to hook up. And obviously the drink is a kiss of death, but he basically reveals himself to be behind all of these deaths, that like he killed her friends and that he's been dosing people with fentanyl, and then he puts cellophane over their faces. And that scene
was crazy.
But this is also great writing from David Koepp, where he talks about the thinness of the cellophane, and he talks about how thin the line is between life and death, and how thin the separation is between living things and dead things. And I thought that's really sharp writing, because not only does it work, like people can die by suffocating on cellophane, which is a very thin substance, but also it's very thematic for the film that we're watching, that like there is this thin layer between living it's things like and death, you know?
Yeah. It's like a veil between the two. Right.
And yeah.
And it's crazy, 'cause he's like, you know, she starts falling asleep and he starts moving her body, and then he takes out the cellophane and he starts talking about it. And then he puts it over her mouth, which I was like, oh my gosh, as an actor, that has to be terrifying. Like, because you see it, like the actress, she can't breathe.
And again, it's all in one. It's We're not cutting.
Yeah. And like, so I'm sure they had to figure all that out, but it was like, it's coming in and then going out. And he's like, you know, you can obviously tell he's enjoying it.
Uh-huh.
So that was a really great performance and a really intense scene.
Yeah.
So then the presence is there watching this the whole time. And then it just like, it leaves and it goes downstairs.
Did you think, as an audience member, I'm going like, don't leave. Don't leave.
That's
like,
what I thought too. I'm like, what are you doing? You got to save her.
Like rip the cellophane off her mouth. You can touch things. Like you can what are you?
And the camera does, every once in a while, it'll do this thing where it like, it bubbles out.
Yeah.
And it like, boom, there's like a sound effect. It's like, it's almost as if like he's, this presence is trying to help, but it can't. It's like being prevented.
It's from trying doing to lurch something. Forward and like grab or scream yeah. or do something, and it stopped. Yeah. It kind of yeah. like hits a wall. And I thought right. that was a cool effect.
I thought and, it was too.
Yeah. And also we should say this scene was foreshadowed. The there's a quick scene where the medium comes back to the house a few days later and she says, I had a dream and I need, and the presence is watching through a window upstairs, this yeah. exchange out on the driveway. And the medium tells the father, I had this dream. There's something to do. Someone's in danger and there's something yeah. to do with a window in your house. And the dad's like, I'm so sorry. You got to leave. He's like, my, yeah. you know, the family,
the mom thought she was crazy.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm like,
I understand. Cause he does he pays them after yeah. like, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But so anyway, the presence runs downstairs and finds the unconscious brother who's been fented out yeah. by crazy Ryan. And the presence starts doing everything it can to wake the brother up. It's just yeah. like it's bubbling at him. It's trying to scream at him, but it doesn't yeah. really have a voice. It's trying to just like rouse, you know, like you can really feel yeah. the desperation yep. of the presence. And
yeah.
against all odds, Ryan or the brother does wake up. What's the brother's name?
Tyler.
Tyler. Tyler does wake up. He runs upstairs just in time to find Ryan on top of his sister.
Well, and it's pretty crazy because he knows something is wrong.
Right.
Tyler, he wakes up and he goes close. I don't know if he says her name, but he immediately knows.
Right.
It's almost like there's an exchange between the presence right. and Tyler because he's like Chloe, and he runs upstairs. And before he even gets in the room, he's like, get off my sister.
Right.
At least that's what I thought. So like, he yeah. runs into the room and Ryan like gets up and he says, get off my sister. And he tackles him and they both fall out the open window mm-hmm. and they fall to the ground. And then the presence goes and you see both the kids on the ground. And then
they look dead.
Yeah. It's pretty clear they're dead. Like it looks like they fell on something. Anyway, they died. They both died.
Yeah.
And then it cuts and then we go to
the last scene of the film.
Last scene. Yeah, which is it's loose. The presence is walking through the empty house.
They're moving out of the house now. They're leaving this haunted house where they're, you know, and the girl's taking one last look at her room. The presence is sort of following her down. We see Lucy Liu, who is just obviously distraught and grief-stricken yep. over her dead son who she loved so much. And there's a thing that's happened a couple times in the movie before where she starts hearing this sound, this high-pitched yeah. ringing right, and she yeah. follows the sound and she follows it to the mirror that has been talked about so much. And for the first time in the movie, the camera goes directly behind the mirror and looks into the mirror as she looks. I'm getting chills talking about it right
me
now.
Me too. Yeah. I'm getting chills
and,
too.
And she looks in the mirror and it's her son, Tyler. Well,
and she's sitting yeah. there and she like brushes the mirror. And when she brushes the mirror, all of a sudden, Tyler is standing behind her.
Yeah, and he's smiling.
And he's just sitting there, and he's smiling. And she freaks
yeah,
out.
Yeah, she screams.
Like, her performance in this was yeah. like, she yells, and she goes, it's Tyler.
Yeah, and
it's
the Tyler. Family.
He was sent back to save you, Chloe, basically. Yeah. I can't remember what she says, but she just breaks down, and yeah, she totally cries.
They run in, the family runs in, and yeah, it's like, and we, the audience, finally understand, oh, this entire movie,
yeah.
it's been Tyler, the brother, who didn't understand who he was because he was looking at stuff from this weird temporal lens where it's like,
yep, yep.
like, but his, everything makes better sense when you get the end of this movie, because it's like, oh, like all of the times that the camera wouldn't look in the reflection, it was this yeah. presence not
yeah.
being ready to understand itself as Tyler. And that's that question that I asked earlier of like, when the medium comes and visits the house and she looks directly at the camera, is she seeing ghost Tyler? While real Tyler is in the room and she yeah. understands. Oh, and then she's trying to explain it to the family. Like, I don't want to tell them that their son's about to die and that it's his yeah. ghost that's in here. But yeah. like, I'm going to try to explain to them that like, sometimes these beings are confused or sometimes.
Well, you know, and yeah. And I mean, she probably can't, you know, like, I mean, right. they would think she was absolutely crazy, but yeah, I don't know. You know, that's the thing that I want to go back and rewatch it, because I'd like to, now that knowing that it's Tyler, that the presence is Tyler, like, does the medium, does she look at him a lot more? And like, how does she interact with the brother?
Right.
Because does she know that it's him? Because she tells immediately, like, once she walks through the door, she sees it. Like,
yeah.
She's
yeah.
following it, you know.
She sees it from the driveway. Like, yeah. she gets out of the car and
yeah.
the presence is looking through a window and she looks immediately right at the camera from the driveway.
Yeah.
And she sees it right away. And then
and she like why, yeah. when she walks in the door, she's like, you know, or yeah. she like gasps or yeah. something. And it's like, it's pretty yeah. crazy. So on rewatch, I want to rewatch this again to pick up all those clues and to pick yeah. up all those. And the other thing that I wanted to talk about, the dad, when they're, the dad is really critical of his son,
mm-hmm.
but you understand why.
Yeah.
Because yeah. the son is a jerk. And the dad is like, listen, Tyler, at one point he's like, there's a really great kid in you. It just needs to come out, you know? And then when Tyler is yelling at his sister at the dinner table, the dad is like, you need, like, I just want you one time to protect your sister.
You yeah, know, could you just like, defend her one time?
Yeah.
Could like, you just be on her team one time?
Yeah.
He's like, you know, that's, and then like, that's the whole arc of the movie is like,
yeah.
And I never thought that we were watching a movie about Tyler's redemption and about like,
no,
Tyler, like
never.
I never thought so it's such a cool thing to be like, oh, like trying to figure out the mystery of, is this somebody that the mom
yeah.
killed to, yeah. to help her son? And it's something really dark and nefarious or, but it's like, no, this is literally just like about how a brother gets the chance in the afterlife to redeem yeah. himself and to, yeah. to show yeah, his sister that he loved her.
Yeah.
And
to make yeah. some sort of, you know, right that all for all the things he did wrong.
And everything about like the fact that it goes to his room and trashes yeah. his room. The fact that it's not so much angry at Tyler as it is angry at itself that
yeah.
it's like
yeah that I can't believe I did just, that
oh, I can't believe that I was so rude to my sister and that you yeah. know and it's yeah. it's such a I just like when that reveal I the whole drive home was thinking about this movie just going wow that's one of those reveals at the, in the last shot of the film where yeah. it's like wow that really and that's just sharp writing from David Koepp to yeah. make it that everything that happened in the film makes a lot more sense and lands yeah. with a lot more emotional resonance
yeah.
when you consider that the entire film you were watching through the perspective of Tyler's ghost that yeah. was coming back through time.
Yeah.
To...
Well, and the last shot, I mean, Lucy Liu is on the ground and she's basically inconsolable and they're, you know, the husband and the daughter are there consoling her, but then the presence goes out, it goes outside and then it like lifts up. And like back a shot on the house as if it's done its duty. Yeah.
Yeah.
And done, which yeah. this is the other thing that was almost exactly like here.
Yeah.
Which in the end of here, it the camera gets off of the tripod and then goes out and shows you where they are.
Yeah.
But I just thought like, again, like I was like, this is such a better execution of basically the same principle.
Yeah.
It's this, the principle is that the camera doesn't cut. And right. you're from one perspective. Now yep. in here, the camera doesn't move, but in Presence, the camera moves and it just helps the movie so much more. And even when we were talking about here, we thought, why doesn't he just move the camera? Like he can move it and like you can still get the same basic effect. But that's what this was. That's what Presence was,
yeah.
was the better execution
yeah.
of the gimmick or the idea of being from one perspective.
Yeah.
And it was just like so much more well executed in this movie.
Yeah. A perspective that can move is always going to be a lot more yeah. interesting yeah. than a perspective that is paralyzed and frozen in the corner of a room.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, I agree. And it's interesting how similar these two movies are, that they take place yeah. entirely in one house
yep.
from one perspective in long, unbroken shots, no close-ups. And that they, at the end of the film, they pull out and show us yeah. the wider view yeah. of the neighborhood and the, yeah. you know, so that's Presence.
Yeah.
Again, if you listen to us talk about it without seeing it, then I feel bad for you because you missed out on a really cool ending.
Well, but you know, it would be interesting though, if you see this movie, now you know it would be a different experience,
yeah.
but you can see what it is now. You can look for those clues. And I think you would still enjoy it, even if you saw it. Like,
so did you? So you said that you figured it out before that last reveal. How
yeah.
soon before was it? Like this, when the son dies, when Tyler jumps out the window, did you go, "Oh, it must be Tyler," or did you know before that?
I can't even remember now. Like I feel like it was either when the presence was going down to get Tyler, I was thinking, you know, somebody's going to die. And I don't, it was very like, I knew it wasn't the friend. And yeah. Then I had figured like, okay, somebody died. So it's somebody close to them. And it's probably somebody that we know. So I think it was like, once Tyler woke up, I think I was like, oh, it's going to be him. Cause he's going to save her and he's going to die.
Yeah.
And then it would be him. So it wasn't like I knew immediately, but I kind of figured it out a little bit before it. I think
I was so caught. And again, this is like strong directing and writing. Yeah, yeah. David Kep is like, I was so caught up in just that climactic scene of going, yeah. Oh, I hope that Tyler gets up there in time, that yeah. I wasn't even, I was off the mystery of like who the presence is. I was yeah. just watching the scene unfold. And then it didn't even like, even really? When it showed Tyler in the mirror, yeah. I thought, oh, is he like the new ghost? And yeah, then yeah, I had, yeah, yeah. And then I had to sit there for a second and go, oh no, duh. He was the ghost the entire the ghost. Time. He was the, it's very like, it's very Interstellar in the way that yeah. it's talking up. And it's also, you know, weirdly kind of deterministic in that like,
yeah,
apparently yeah. this is how the timeline always went. Yeah. So there's only certain things that the presence can do
yeah.
because things have to happen the way that they happen.
Yeah.
And so in order for the presence to have been there,
yeah.
things would have had to have, it's this like
yeah. Yeah, yeah,
this
yeah.
deterministic time loop of like,
yeah.
It has to happen that Tyler tackles Ryan out the window and they right. both die.
Yeah. Cause otherwise, yeah. And it's funny because this is the time travel movie that we didn't think that we were going to get.
Right.
You know,
right.
But
it's
yeah,
a ghost story and a weird kind of, yeah.
Groundhog's Day
quantum yeah. time travel movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah. I did love that. Like and again, like full disclosure, after I saw this, I was like, okay, like that was good. That was okay. And like, I left and I was like thinking like what the scores would be. And then like, I did some more research and just continuing to think about it. I was like, man, this movie is really good. Cause it stays with you. And yeah. then you start understanding more and you start understanding that like, if you go in knowing that this is a family drama,
yeah,
it would make it a lot better. Like,
yeah, don't think you're going to go get a really exciting, jump scare every minute, thrill ride. It's really just a movie that you're just watching a story unfold. And,
yes. Yeah.
And it's got some nice chills and some unexpected twists and turns, but yeah. it's just a well-crafted film. It's just yeah. So let's get into our scores. Speaking okay. of,
yeah,
so for presence, we will do a technical score, a score on the ending, on rewatchability, a cultural, cultural relevance or impact score, and our subjective scores. What are you giving presence technically?
So technically, sorry, I'm giving this a 9.
Okay.
And I'm going to give you some of my reasons for giving it a 9.
Okay.
The acting is probably what brought it down to mm-hmm. a point. Just and some of the problems with having just one camera, be the perspective. But so this movie, I am baffled in a good way by this movie because they made it for $2 million.
Yeah.
As Steven Soderbergh, who did Ocean's 11, who did Traffic, who did, he's an Academy Award winning director. He knows what he's doing. Like he's a really good director. He made this for $2 million.
Yeah.
And they shot it in 11 days.
Mm-hmm.
The technical achievement of this.
Shooting it in 11 days is crazy.
Right?
Because surely they had to have rehearsed. Like that must yeah. be just shooting days.
And I don't know what, if it's just shooting days or whatever.
Yeah.
But they turned this around real quick. And here's the thing about the other thing that I love about Soderbergh. So he is his own DP.
Mm-hmm.
He's his own cinematographer.
Yeah.
DP is director of photography,
yep.
if you don't know. And he also edits his movie.
Oh, wow.
So he's the director, DP, and editor.
I've always had a lot of respect for Steven Soderbergh because yeah. I think that he's one of those directors who's just always maintained his kind of yes. film school, ambitious yes. Spirit. Like everyone that are his contemporaries, people like Matt Damon and like people that work with him all the time, when they talk about Steven Soderbergh, they go, the only thing that he's interested in is what's new. Like the only thing that he's interested in is like stuff that he hasn't already done. Yeah. So anytime I bring him a project, he's just like, oh, I've already done that. Like, so he's, if you look at his filmography, he's always doing different genres and he's always doing different challenges and he's always trying different, because he's just interested in like different kinds of ways. So he's very similar to Robert Zemeckis in that way.
He is, because he takes big swings.
Yeah.
His are usually, you know, a better, he very rarely strikes out.
I just think that Steven Soderbergh's like a little bit better of an artist. Like he's just a little more detailed
Well, and I love the fact, you know, he'll do these huge Hollywood movies.
Yeah.
You know, Ocean's 11 and 12 and 13 are all great movies that are really good popcorn movies that are smart. But then he does this movie for $2 million, or he does, what is it called? Bubble, I think, where he just got like random people that lived in this town and he made a movie with them.
Or Unsane, which he shot on an iPhone.
Yeah. And And I haven't seen Unsane and I haven't seen his other one that he did on an iPhone, but he shot this on like a Sony AS3 or something, or like some camera. But the thing that I like about him is that his movies don't look cheap digital. This movie had an amazing look. Mm-hmm. Like it still looked like a movie, like, and it felt like a movie. It didn't look like, you know, Michael Mann has a horrible look. I hate the way that Michael Mann
people like look. That. And I think his movies look terrible.
They're horrible.
Even
the iPhone movies the clips that I've seen, like I can tell it's on an iPhone, but it doesn't look like a digital camera, like a crappy, like, you know, high. It doesn't look bad. But anyway, Steven Soderbergh he's a great director, and I do love his, like, I appreciate him taking the swings, just like Zemeckis, but like Zemeckis strikes out and Soderbergh will at least get a single, you know, like he'll, or a double or what. And a lot of times he'll get a home run, you know, I mean, Traffic is amazing. And Ocean's 11 and 13 are like one of my favorite movies. So
I like Soderbergh a lot, and I just think that like my personal style, just I respect Robert Zemeckis. It's not shade to Robert Zemeckis. Like, obviously, there's the hits in there that you got to give it up for, and we've talked about those as well on this channel already. But it they are similar in that way where they're both people who are always interested in what's new and what's a different way that how can I do it differently, and how can you know? And I just like I think that Soderbergh's got more of like an indie spirit to him. He likes to do things small, and he likes to, and I respect that.
Yeah.
I gave this movie an 8 technically.
Yeah.
And here's why it's not like a 9 or a 10 is just, I respect obviously what this movie has done technically. I think it's very well crafted technically. I think it's very tight and very, there's no fat on it. Like you said, 85 minutes and everything works in the movie. There's nothing that feels superfluous or extra. Yeah. And I didn't feel like we were missing anything either. I might have liked in the screenplay a resolution to the red herring with the mom.
Yeah.
I might have liked that was like, oh, okay, that's what that was, you know?
Yeah. And that is ultimately Tyler understanding his parents better. But it is a red herring. Yeah, I totally get what you're talking
about. Like maybe in the scene right before they leave to go out of town, that when they're talking in the bedroom, like they like talk it out and they reveal what it is. And it's like, oh, okay, so that's not what I thought it was. And then we go into the final scene. And also I just think that like here's the thing is, it's amazing that this movie was made for $2 million. But I also look at that and go, it's only $2 million because it's Steven Soderbergh and Lucy Liu. I look at this movie and go, I think that I could make this movie with my friends for $100,000. Or like, I think that like some indie filmmakers could make this exact same movie. That's what's so cool about it. It's all shot in one location. And it's, if you've got one camera op and you don't have to do a whole lot of editing, you could turn around a finished product in like a month or two. And, you know, and so
even with what you're saying, like, I totally agree with what you're saying. Somebody could have made this movie. It probably wouldn't have been as good because of how experienced Soderbergh is, but like there are indie filmmakers who make movies that are more than this.
Totally.
Like $5 million is a cheap budget
for sure,
and there are a ton of movies and they're nowhere near as good, which just makes me think, like, listen, you can make a great movie for not a lot of money if you really focus on the right things. So yeah. Anyway,
and Presence is probably already, you know, made its money back.
It's made $3 million so far. It'll probably make $10 million, but it will make a profit.
I hope people go see it. I think it should be seen. I think it's a really solid flick. Yeah, but I think that sometimes with technical score, I'm really looking at like how much did you need to do, and this movie didn't require a whole lot but everything that they had to do, they did well, and so maybe that's why I'm docking a couple points. Good. Ending. How'd you feel like the ending was for this movie?
Oh man, I gave the ending an 8.
Okay.
And it was more for it was really good and the reveal was awesome. Like, especially, you know, it does give me chills and everything. Yeah. But I think I kind of wondered, like, when he wakes up, when Tyler wakes up and he runs and he just tackles him out the window, it was almost almost a little anticlimactic in the sense that I almost feel like there could have been something more. But then again, like, he had to hurry. So it's just kind of like, I did really like the ending and I appreciated it, but I felt a little lacking. But I still, I mean, an 8, I think, is a pretty good score.
Absolutely. I gave the ending to Presence a 10 out of 10. I don't know that I've done this yet on this show.
Hey, there you go.
This ending knocked me out. Like, I did this in the theater, and I don't do this often. I was sitting there. It's a very chill watch. Like, hour and a half, and I was just watching kind of like this the entire movie, and I did this. I went... Like, as she was screaming, I was going,
yeah, it was pretty, yeah.
Like, I was not ready for it. And the way that the ending recontextualized the entire rest of the movie that I had just watched and made me like, I already was like, yeah, that was pretty good. It's a pretty good movie. And then the ending made me go, that was a great movie. Like, it's one of the best, for me, it's one of the best movie endings I've seen in a very long time. And it's one of those endings that makes me go, oh man, sometimes you can do something in the last frame of a film that makes your entire screenplay go like, now do you get it? And it's like, oh geez. Like, and I don't know. There are movies like The Sixth Sense or like The Usual Suspects where you're already enjoying watching the movie the entire time. You're following along. Yep. You're interested in the mystery as it unravels. But then that ending makes you go, oh my gosh, what just happened?
Yeah,
what,
you know, like, your mind just blows.
Oh geez. This movie, I was honestly, the entire film was kind of just like, yeah, this is pretty good. It's okay. Yeah. I wasn't like super, and the ending made the whole thing a really excellent film to me. So,
you know, I just upped mine to a 9 because it really is what it is. Like, it really was really good. I can't give it a 10, but I do. It does deserve a 9 for sure.
Fair enough. Rewatchability. Where are you at?
Rewatchability, I gave an 8 because I think it's a quick rewatch.
Sure.
And as you rewatch it, you're going to get more and more from it. You know, you're going to figure out, it'll be a different experience watching it for the first time, and it'll be a completely different experience watching it the second time and then any other time after that. So.
I also gave it an 8. This is the kind of movie that I want to show other people.
Yeah.
That I want to sit down with someone and watch it with them for the first time and see how they react to it and know that, and prime them and be like, just so you know, like, it's not like super scary. It's not just, we're just going to watch this thing and then just see if they catch on to it.
Totally.
See what it, you know, how it sits with them. I think that would be fun. So I gave it an 8 because I don't think it's, I think once you've seen this movie 2 or 3 times, maybe it's probably like, I'm good on that. Like, I don't need to keep rewatching that, but still strong rewatchability here. Cultural impact for this film.
I gave it a 7. I think it will catch on later and I think it will be more popular, but I think also a lot of people are expecting a horror movie when they shouldn't expect a horror movie. What'd you give it?
I gave it a 6. Unfortunately, I just don't think the audiences are like forgiving enough to allow something to go against their expectation.
Very true.
And I think that unfortunately, like, of the two films that tried this single perspective, all in a house concept, I think more people are going to wind up seeing here and thinking it just doesn't really work. And I wish that I could say that the cultural impact of this movie would be bigger, because I do think, I could see down the road how filmmakers and screenwriters are going to look at this film and go, look what they did. And I hope that that this movie inspires indie filmmakers and inspires people to do more with less and to get creative about your writing and about like thinking about how you're going to structure something so that it can be accomplished and effective. I hope it will have that kind of impact, but on the larger, bigger cultural consciousness, I don't know if this movie is going to register.
Yeah, I think you're kind of right. Yeah.
And your subjective score for Presence?
My subjective score is an 8. Mm-hmm. I think it, and it's, you know, it started out after I left the theater, I was like, you know, it's probably like a 6.5. You know, like I think my expectations were too high. And then each day after, it's just been like, no, it's definitely a 7. And then like, no, it's definitely 7.5. No, you know what? It's an 8. So I'm settling on an 8 because it was really good.
That's where I'm at. I'm at 8. You know, it's a thing where I'm like, I'm not going to give this a 9 or a 10 out of 10. It's not like it's not like you watch the movie and go, wow, this is one of the most incredible things I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. It's clever. You're watching it going, oh, clever concept. It's original. It's it's thought provoking. It's doing interesting things. Technically, it's got a screenplay that keeps you engaged. You're engaged with the information that you're receiving. And it's got an ending that really makes the whole thing sing in a really exciting way. But it's a really solid movie. 8 out of 10. Can't recommend it enough. I think that more people should go see it so that the message gets out to Hollywood that they should make cheaper films that are just good.
Yeah. And have a great story.
Yeah.
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 Interesting concepts.
And you can make money that way, you know?
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Jason Blum does it all the time.
Yep. All right. Well, there it is. Have you seen Presence? Will you see Presence? Let us know your thoughts. And your theories, are there things that we missed in this movie where there potentially are things that we could miss? Let us know. And we'll see you at the next one. As always, like, share, and subscribe. You know, comment, do all the things that can help push this. We continue getting more and more subscribers over on our channel. So
And hey, comment. We will talk. We will message back. You know, and let's have a discussion about it. So,
All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you at the next one.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.